Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Kent Babb, and he is out with a brand new book, Across the River, Life, Death, and Football in an American City. The book is available now everywhere, and Kent is with the Washington Post, the feature sports writer. Kent, when you put together a book like that, these feature sports writers, it seems like some of them are very compelling stories. Well, all of them are very compelling stories. Some of them are completely tragic, which this one, there's a lot of tragedy involved. So what was your idea and who's your target of audience of putting together a story like this? Because it's an absolutely heartbreaking story for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it's very serious material. I mean, gun violence in this country is a real thing. And in a place like New Orleans, I mean, the per capita shooting rate is staggeringly high. And, you know, one of the things about New Orleans is often we talk about the south side of Chicago or St. Louis or Baltimore when we talk about shootings in this country. Well, that's kind of misguided because New Orleans is actually a little bit worse. I mean, and why it's worse is not just the per capita shootings, but shootings in that city take place at any time of day in any neighborhood. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. Just in the last two Saturdays, 10 people, a combined 10 people, got shot on Bourbon Street. I mean, that's where I've spent many a night. I mean, that's the tourist nerve center of the whole city. And gunshots ring out. I mean, and a lot of these are mass shootings on two consecutive Saturdays in August. And so it's a city whose young people are under siege. And, you know, a lot of these young people don't have any idea how to deal with this. They don't know how to de-escalate tense issues or conversations. There's not a whole lot of conflict resolution that's talked about in a lot of these households. And so Coach Bryce Brown at Edna Carr High School uses football, you know, which for all of its many problems is still, you know, the most powerful draw in high school sports. He uses football as a vehicle to teach life and survival skills so that these young people learn that, yes, there are dangers kind of all around you, but here's how you can avoid them. Here's how you can de-escalate them. And here's how you can rise above and sort of cross the river and go succeed, and as far as Bryce is concerned, never come back.
Bryce Brown is a hero in this story and in life in general, but as he's a big man physically, he suffered a lot of pain in his life, and so he not only sympathizes with these players, he empathizes, right?
This is somebody who, and I've come to really respect and admire Bryce. I mean, he's a friend of mine now, and, you know, I've learned an awful lot about his life. He had his father was murdered, his best friend was murdered, and his former quarterback was murdered, who he was particularly close to. Trauma for Bryce and just dealing with these mega stresses is just part of his life. And he thinks it's part of everybody's life. He thinks it's normal just for somebody that you know to get gunned down. So he's always sort of bracing for these terrible, terrible things. He acts as if he's unworthy of the success that he's achieved and, in fact, earned. So it is heavy. I mean, like in mental health and mental health awareness in this country is still sort of a new conversation. You know, Bryce is almost 400 pounds. I mean, so he deprives himself of, you know, exercise. He, for somebody that big, he doesn't actually eat very much. I mean, he forgets to eat often. So when he does, he eats an awful lot. He stress eats. For him, every time the phone rings, there's a part of his brain that makes him think that something terrible has happened, and that's a terrible way to go through life. I feel for him. He's also this amazing coach. I mean, when I started the story, he had won three consecutive state championships, which is unheard of in a state like Louisiana. It's just extremely hard to do. He's a genius on the football field, but he's torn apart off of it.
Did you get a sense that New Orleans has a different marketing scheme than a lot of these cities? Because as I read this book, I always have this romantic view of New Orleans with Bourbon Street and the jazz music and the Creole. That's what I hear about when I think of New Orleans. Chicago, I love all the things about Chicago, but the Chicago violence is right out there. What makes New Orleans keep the violent nature of their city so quietly on a nationwide level that we just don't hear about it?
I think you hit on it right there. I mean, it's a marketing strategy. And, I mean, this is a tourism industry in this city that is billions and billions of dollars. When I first wrote a story, you may or may not remember this, but in 2016, which was a particularly bloody year in New Orleans, Will Smith, the former defensive end for the New Orleans Saints who helped win the Super Bowl, so he got murdered in New Orleans. And this is not like in a tough part of town. This is in the Lower Garden District where, like, Emeril Lagasse lives, where Sandra Bullock lives. This is a ritzy part of town, There was a fender bender. Gunshots rang out. This hero, to a lot of people who live there, got killed. And somebody from City Hall called me when I wrote about that and asked me to not write that New Orleans has a gun violence problem. And that just, that messed my brain up, Brian, because it made me think, okay, you have this problem, but you're concerned that I'm going to tell people that you have this problem. And I get it. I mean, like, you do have to sort of embrace, like, what the local economy gives you. But the thing that I love about Bryce is that he doesn't stand for nonsense. He doesn't stand for anything but honesty and truth. The whole reason I wrote about him to begin with, and what I've come to respect most about him, is you get honesty. Every person in the program and beyond deserves and receives honesty, even if it's uncomfortable. They deal with the reality surrounding them. They don't pretend they don't exist.
I'm chatting with Kent Babb about his brand new book, Across the River, Life, Death, and Football in an American City. And, you know, you mentioned that that Coach Bryce Brown deprives himself of food. I remember reading a line in there that you wrote that he deprives himself of joy, too. Can you explain what that means?
I've never seen Bryce, no matter the accomplishment, you know, even this book coming out, you know, which it's not every day if somebody writes a book about you. He's just not somebody who celebrates. I mean, a friend of mine put it very well, like, he's just never there when the party happens. So, you know, when they won their third straight state championship, you know, there are other assistant coaches who are crying, talking about, you know, this is my professional mountaintop. And it is a big deal. I mean, if you're in high school football in class 4A, which is one of the bigger classifications, and you win three in a row, that's something that's only been done once ever in this state. You know, that's a big deal. Bryce, meanwhile, went into his office all by himself, drank two Powerades, and left the office alone. He didn't celebrate. He didn't go to the party. He just turned the page. And it doesn't matter what's happening in his life. I mean, he could be having the best day of his life because he believes, and this isn't true, of course, but he believes and treats himself as if he feels joy today, then he'll feel despair tomorrow. So he, in some ways, believes that the joy, the happiness brings on the tragedy, or at least it makes it worse. Again, that's not true. It's just, you know, it is heartbreaking because, I mean, I want this person to experience the, you know, the fruits of his labor. I mean, this is still a young person. He's only 35 right now. He's done amazing things, but he just won't allow himself to celebrate. And, I mean, it's that there's something tough to witness about that, and I'm sure it's even tougher to live through.
I thought it was interesting that Edna Carr High School, where Bryce coaches and mentors these young men, it's an open enrollment for the entire city, and so he can draw kids from all necks of the woods there. And is that something unique to New Orleans? Because we don't have that here, we're open enrollment.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that's unique, you know, about Carr and New Orleans itself. For one, post-Katrina, every school, there's no real, like, public school system in New Orleans as we kind of traditionally know it in this country. After Katrina, New Orleans schools were largely decimated. Carr was a magnet school, meaning for like you had to pass like a pretty demanding intelligence test to get in. And after Katrina, it was one of the only schools that sustained minor or no damage whatsoever. So they had to get these kids in school from all over the city. So they sent them all to Carr, and it became Edna Carr Charter High School. And from uptown to Algiers, I mean, this is like sort of all over the city. And this is not a city that embraces strangers or newcomers. Like, this, it's a very, very territorial city. You don't often move out of your neighborhood. You don't walk out of your neighborhood. You certainly don't trust anybody who's not from your neighborhood. And suddenly, as of 2006, people are having to play alongside each other that they don't know, they don't trust. They say they can't even understand how they talk. And so there's something really unique about this melting pot culture that is at McCarr High School. And I think it's really valuable, but I also believe it's highly uncomfortable for the people who go there, at least in the beginning.
Did you get any resistance as you started writing about it?
No, I mean, I was told to write the story kind of just as it is. I mean, at the beginning, you know, I kind of went in with a little, you know, I was trying to be soft about it. I was thinking about changing some names to protect the, you know, the kids, and just, you don't want to give too much personal information out. Nope. Better not do that. If you're going to tell the story, Kent, you better tell it the right way. You know, they've got a saying down there, give them the real. And that's what they tell the kids, and that means they get honesty constantly. And that's how they encouraged me to write this book. You know, write this just as it is. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't make it easier or more comfortable to read. This is real life in a real city. show them how it really is. Give them the real.
Well, as happens with so many great nonfiction pieces, sometimes they just come out at the right time, and this one certainly seemed to. This one is called Across the River, Life, Death, and Football in an American City by Kent Babb. He's a journalist with the Washington Post, does sports features writing. Kent, just an amazing story here. There's tragedy, there's triumph, it's got everything, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Brian. Have a good one.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.